FNR, Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Live across Australia, this is FNR Football Nation Radio. It is Carlos Alberto Diego and it's Football Extra, where we bring you news and more on a daily basis here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Today we're going to spend a bit of time talking to a number of people about the World Cup draw and some insights into what Australia will be facing in Russia in 2018. You can join in the conversation anytime. Today on the show we are giving away to our best caller or SMSer a traditional premium packed Panettone from our great friends there at Ital. Just give us a call on our talkback line on 9944 9999 9999 9999 03 if you're outside Victoria, plus 613 if you're overseas. SMS us on 0428 9 3345 0428 9 3345. You can join us anytime during our live shows today. And of course, as I said, we're going to be speaking World Cup draw this hour. And of course, I will catch up with Jason Pine, the Sky Sports commentator over in the in New Zealand. He called both games against Peru, New Zealand versus Peru in the playoffs, and we'll speak to him later on the show. And of course, we have Thomas Sorensen, Denmark international, a legendary player for Denmark. He'll be joining us to talk about Denmark. And we also have a number of other people talking on the show today. But firstly, we'll go to head of performance there at the FFA. Luke Casserly is on the line, just fresh back from Russia. Good morning to you, Luke.
Yeah, good morning. How are you going?
I'm really, really well, mate. How's the jet lag going?
Not too bad. I seem to be on planes more than I'm at home, so I'm getting used to it now.
Yeah, well, it's certainly the life of someone involved with football, especially at the top level, and especially in a year when we're going to the World Cup. Now, Luke, you were over in Russia for the draw, France, Denmark and Peru. What's your assessment of our draw?
Yeah, look, I think it's an interesting group for us. You know, we're in pot four based on our ranking, and so you always, I think, you know, for us, they're certainly not going to be easy games, but when I look back in comparison to the group we got in 2014, then you're probably going into this one with a little bit more optimism.
Absolutely. It's not, you know, universally probably accepted, it's not what you call the group of death, but certainly we've got France, an elite team in world football, a team that would go to the World Cup thinking it can win the World Cup. Denmark and, of course, Peru. These two teams have had to go through their own playoffs, but we know Denmark is a team that can score a lot of goals and they're very, very competitive. In fact, they beat Poland, a team that topped their group to go straight through and they were in pot one. And Peru, I think they're 11th in the world. So it's a different dynamic to what we're used to by way of the group of death. Is the approach any different really for us?
No, not really. I think, you know, if you just read a lot of the comments on social media and the likes from some of the players, it's they're still in a very positive mindset, that never take a backward step attitude, and they're really looking forward to it. So, yeah, I think, you know, from the playing group and the staff, everyone will be going to the World Cup in a very positive mindset and looking to make an impression.
We, of course, have got France in the first game, and given the team like France will want to build into the tournament, as I said before, they're probably looking at winning, you know, they'd be fancying themselves to win the thing. So a lot of the teams aren't really at their best in the first game or maybe even the group stages, but still do enough to get through. Do you think getting them first would be an advantage for us?
Oh, look, it can go both ways. Everyone knows how important it is to get off to a good start to ensure you are at the top end of your group. But typically, traditionally, France haven't been the quickest starters in these tournaments. But, you know, we've got the first game where our base camp that we've chosen is in Kazan, and the first game is in Kazan, so we don't need to travel for the game. So logistically, that's a good one for us. Look, it's always a difficult one to say. When you look at that French squad, you know, they've got, you know, a plethora of world-class players. So it's an incredible challenge for us, a great challenge. And, yeah, hopefully we can, you know, perform to the best of our ability and get something out of that game. And then who knows after that, that'll put us in good stead for the rest of it, hopefully.
Absolutely. And you talk about those world-class players in Griezmann, Mbappe, Lamar. I mean, you can go through the whole team. They're fantastic players. Do you, in your preparation, really drill down as deep as, you know, looking at each player in that squad and build a game plan around that opposition? Or is it just the collective that you look at and the way they've played in qualifying and what they might do in games between now and the World Cup itself?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of components to it, and obviously it's the coaching staff and technical side that make those decisions on how we do our approach. But I think we, you know, we're quite detailed in our planning and our approach, and guys like Ante Milicic, Peter Klimovsky, they do a lot of work on the individual details of every single player. So there's kind of both. They do a lot of work on the trending of the opposition, so how they create their chances, the trending on how chances are created against them. But they do also do a lot of detail on the individual player as well, just so our players know, you know, a certain player always likes to come this way, or they cheat in these situations, or whatever it is. So we do a bit of both, but obviously we'll have a new manager that may have a slightly different approach to things going into this tournament. But certainly over the last 4 years, it's kind of been a combination of the overall team play, team patterns, and the real drill into the detail of individuals.
And when they lose a game, I mean, France lost one game in their qualifying against Sweden away from home, 2-1. Sweden, of course, finished second and ended up going through the World Cup through playoffs by beating Italy over the two legs. Do you just grab a hold of that game and rip that game apart and say, OK, what did Sweden do to make it so difficult for France? Or because it's just the one game over a four-year qualification, do you not take that much notice from that performance?
No, like I said, the guys will basically go over every game for the last 12 months and analyse the trends.
Mm.
So if they're making goals, scoring goals or making goal-scoring chances, and there's really clear patterns to what they do for that to happen, then that's areas that we'll focus on and how to stop the opposition. And the same for any chances, goals scored against them or chances that they concede. If there's any clear patterns, then we'll target those weaknesses to try and take advantage of. So it's not really about one specific game. It's really about the trending and the patterns over a whole period. And with someone like France, you can do that because they've had the same coach and a pretty consistent playing group for some time. That becomes a little bit more difficult if people have a new coach and have only played a couple of games with that particular coach and the likes. But with someone like France, and it gives us the opportunity to do that.
Of course, Denmark are a team that, in many ways, Australia can be the type of team that Denmark, you know, is a very, very strong team when they're at their best, a team that's a very good collective. Not really a lot of stars. I mean, I know they've got Christian Eriksen, but there's not a huge amount of stars in that team, but they are a powerhouse that on their day can beat some of the best. Like I said, in qualifying, they beat Poland 4-0, and they beat the Republic of Ireland in the second playoff game, you know, 5-1 or something like that. You know, they can score a lot of goals. How do you view a team like Denmark?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, obviously there's Eriksen, but there's also Schmeichel, Thomas Delaney, von Werder Bremen there. They've got good players, young Christensen, who's at Chelsea. So they've certainly got the caliber of players. I spent a bit of my playing career in Sweden, in Scandinavia. One thing about their manager has basically won titles in all of the Scandinavian countries, or not all, but in Sweden, Norway, Denmark. And the Scandinavians typically are very, very well organised. They're quite astute. They typically have the view that, you know, when they're playing in Europe, they're probably not as good as the top teams. So they always want to be well organised. They're well prepared physically. They're good athletes. Generally, they're intelligent footballers. So that's kind of what I expect from Denmark. They're a little bit different to, you know, Norway and the likes. As a Scandinavian country, Danish football, it's probably a little bit more like the Dutch in the way that they want to play, but they'll be very well organised. And you know, like I said in the beginning, you go to a World Cup, there's not really an easy game, and I certainly don't expect that in this. But there are also games that we certainly go in there with a little bit of a, you know what, we can, you know, if we're on top of our game, we can make an impression here.
Now, Peru is an interesting one also. They're definitely a good team. I mean, you don't qualify through the South American, confederation, and also through playoffs if you're not a good team. And they're 11th in the world, but a lot of their players play in Peru and they're playing Mexico. So how do you get enough information on a team like that and the individuals in that team to be able to be confident that you know what they're about?
Yeah, look, getting the information is not that difficult as far as seeing games. So there's a lot of platforms that you can use at the moment, Y-Scout and the likes, where you can get access to the games. But we're kind of big fans of live scouting. We think we get a lot more detail when you actually do live scouting. So we'll start that now. So obviously, the video footage will go through, but we'll have live scouts at any practice games that these guys play between now and the World Cup and try and get as much information as you can. But that again will be our technical staff, not me, but I'll do everything I can to coordinate the planning for them and make sure they can do the job that they need to do and get as much information as we can on these teams.
So those live scouts, Luke, are they Australians that you might send over there, or are they people that you might know in these regions that you trust and that they can actually look at games and break it down for you? That's the first question. The second question is, what do you specifically look at in these live scouting sessions that you won't pick up on video?
Yeah, so firstly, we do tap into contacts that we have around the world, but when we send people, we do send our own Australians live scouts. You know, within our national team department, we've worked really hard in the last 4 years to ensure that we're developing Australian talent. So those type of things, we want to give those opportunities to Australians to be able to develop their football knowledge and contribute to what we do. So we definitely use Australians to do that. But from the live scouting, it's interesting. You just get a much greater feel for, certain movements, whether it's on, set pieces, stuff that happens before it and around it, that might not be captured on camera. You know, players' body language, players in certain situations when the camera follows the ball, don't get back into position quick enough or whatnot. You do get, not always, you get the tactical footage. If you get the tactical footage, you get the whole print of the pitch, so it's not the... but a lot of times, you only get the TV footage, which, when you get in the TV footage of games, it will show replays of goals, and it will... there's certain parts that you'll miss out. You just get a lot more detail, and even just some similar things of players' physical presence and the impact that can have on the pitch. We just feel that we get that little bit extra and more detail from a live scout than we do from video footage.
I was listening to you on FNR not long ago about the criteria you might use for the next Socceroo coach. Will the teams we've drawn in the World Cup in Russia in 2018, will that make a difference to the type of coach that FFA might employ?
If we go for a short-term approach, with the focus being the World Cup, then a number of factors like that will come into it. But if we're going for a long-term approach to 2022, then not so much. Then the focus isn't just so much on the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. And as far as you've talked about being stationed in Kazan in Russia, and that was the location where the team will be there throughout the whole tournament. What other preparation have you guys done, even before the draw, that would get you maybe an advantage that other countries might not have at the moment?
Well, Denmark, for one, they haven't chosen a base camp. So I think it gives you a bit of an idea on their mindset, where they're a little bit surprised that they're at the World Cup. Mm. So they've still got a little bit of work to do there, where we're one of the nations that were in there really early and made sure that we got what we wanted, particularly in Kazan, the bases of the home training base of the number one ice hockey team in Russia, and their gym sports science recovery facilities were the best that we came across. I think there's 54 possible base camps throughout Russia. From the research that we did beforehand, we visited 12 base camps, and from that aspect, as far as a city that is a host city, so there's a chance you might have games there, and plus it gives a bit of a buzz and a feel that you're at the World Cup, which we didn't have in Brazil. But as far as the ease of the facility, we don't need to bus to training grounds. We can just walk across from our accommodation onto the training pitch, all within the one quarters, and the recovery facilities were world class. So, you know, when I look at that, we feel really comfortable about our logistical planning. And to hear someone like Denmark still hasn't chosen a base camp, you know, it certainly feel that we're a little bit ahead. Of course, Denmark is not a big trip in for them from where they are, so they'll most likely have their training camp at home and then come across the mandatory 5 days before the tournament.
If they don't do something quickly, they might end up in Siberia, the Siberia base camp, so which is probably not something that they want to do in lead up to their games. But Eric Bordiak, the Brisbane Roar import, when asked on the weekend what he thought of Australia's chances against France, he said that France are light years ahead of us in the way they play their football. You know, the fact that people will be underestimating us against France and maybe some of the other teams, is that an advantage for us going into this competition?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I'd be, with the players that France have, obviously, you know, their qualifications in European tournaments, I don't think that they would have done too much detailed work on us. But I expect they will do their work, as everyone will. But I also expect that we probably won't be a main focus for them in their preparation. So, yeah, hopefully we can surprise them. Look, you look at their players and you look at the level that they're at and the clubs that they're at, and they're not just players at big clubs, they're key players at big clubs. You know, so I can certainly, on one hand, understand their mentality a little bit, and hopefully that is an advantage for us and we can catch them on the hop. But, you know, for us to get something out of a team like France, we know that we're going to have to be on top of our game in every aspect.
And one last one, mates. The games between now and the World Cup, what have we got planned?
Yeah, we're just working through that. Obviously, there was you know, a whole lot of activity at the draw, post-draw, where everyone is trying to line up practice matches against similar style opponents that they have in their groups. So we're just going through that negotiations now. But basically, you know, we'll look to play a couple of games in the March FIFA window is the next opportunity that we have, and then typically we will look to play the farewell match here in Australia. We'll head across to a training camp in Europe, probably in southern Europe, for the heat and prepare in the hottest possible climate that we can before moving into the slightly cooler climate in Russia. And typically we would have two practice games through that period. So before the first game between March and the May/June pre-camps, we'll be looking to have you know, around five matches before we go into the tournament.
Yeah, it's not a heap of games, especially for a new coach. But Luke, I know you've got a lot on your plate now, mate. The excitement now with the draw, I think it's all become a reality for us now. So you've got a big job ahead of you. I can't wait for the coach to be appointed and you guys to really get stuck into your works. Thanks for joining us today on Football Extra.
Our pleasure.
Good on you, mate. That's Luke Casserly, FFA Head of National Performance, here on Football Extra on FNR Football Nation Radio. After the break, we're going to go over to New Zealand and speak to Jason Pine, the Sky Sports commentator, who commentated both legs of the New Zealand versus Peru game in the playoffs for the World Cup. Of course, Peru got through there. He'll tell us in detail what the Peruvians were like and what we're going to be up against in the World Cup in Russia in 2018. This is Football Extra on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yeah, streaming live 24/7. This is a radio revolution. It's FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra this morning, we're actually focusing on the World Cup draw and our opponents, France, Denmark, and also Peru for Russia 2018. We just spoke to Luke Casserly, head of performance there at FFA. He was in Russia during the draw. Now, earlier today, we got across to New Zealand and spoke to Jason Pine, football commentator for Radio Sport and Sky Sport. Jason actually commentated on the both home and away leg of New Zealand's World Cup qualifying playoff against Peru, one of the teams, of course, drawn against us in Russia 2018. I had a great long chat with Jason. He had a lot to say, a lot of good oil about our opposition.
Jason, thanks for joining us today, mate. The Socceroos have drawn France, Denmark and Peru in our World Cup qualifying group in Russia. Peru, or Los Incas as they're also known, defeated All Whites over two legs in the World Cup playoffs recently. Given that you called it kick by kick, tackle by tackle, have the Aussies got anything to really worry about?
Well, I think, good morning, Carlos. Yeah, look, I think Peru will be a really good opponent for the Socceroos come Russia next year. When I saw the draw come out, I was delighted to see Australia in with Peru, actually, because I think it'll give us here in New Zealand a really good indication as to just how competitive we were against them. And, I think you know, having watched Peru across two legs, one game here in Wellington and the other one in Lima, I think Australia are a really good chance to get something out of a game against a team that is, well, let's face it, they're ranked pretty highly in the world. They were in pot two, weren't they, in the World Cup draw. But they haven't been to a World Cup for quite some time. They're, it's not as though they're World Cup regulars like Australia have been for the last three and now four tournaments. Look, they're a good side, make no mistake about it. They're South American in their approach and in their fan base. But, I think Australia would have would back themselves to get a result against the Peruvians when that game rolls around next year.
As you said, they're a South American team, and you know, the way we see South American teams, they're streetwise, they're technical, with a very much a short passing focus. A lot of 1-2s around the park just to penetrate. Do they have anything else in their locker that make them a bit special?
What they did in the away leg in particular was really push their fullbacks nice and high. That was the big change from what happened in Wellington in the first leg, where they tended to sit a bit deeper and try and attack through midfield and further up top. Their fullbacks in the return leg in Lima were noticeably more advanced more regularly during the game. So I think if they continue with that approach against sides of the World Cup next year, that's certainly something that Australia will have to be aware of, the fullbacks getting forward. You're dead right about the quick passing, though. They've got some wonderful players in midfield. Christian Quaver is a guy who pulls a lot of strings for them in the middle of the park. Andre Carrillo, another attacking player with a really, really, he's got a lot of tricks in his locker. And, of course, they'll welcome back Pablo Guerrero, who didn't play against New Zealand in either leg. He's their captain, their all-time leading goal scorer. He was suspended for the two games against New Zealand for failing that drugs test, and that brought about a bit of a change. Jefferson Farfan came in up front and scored the goal that gave Peru the lead in the second leg and played pretty well in that second game. But with Guerrero back, they'll certainly have something else to add to their attacking weaponry. So yeah, I think fullbacks nice and high, lots of 1-2s and tick attacker in the middle of the park, and Guerrero as the front man. Those will be the attacking threats as far as the Peruvians are concerned.
You talked about Jefferson Farfan. Of course, he scored the one of the goals in that return leg, as you said. 23 goals in 79 appearances. He's 33 years of age. Is he the Timmy Cahill of Peruvian football?
Yeah, it's not a bad comparison, actually. You know, he seems to keep on keeping on. And without Guerrero there, he became a bit of a talisman for them. I'm not sure that he's universally adored in Peru. I think when Guerrero was ruled out, I don't know whether everybody would have picked Jefferson Farfan as the man to lead the attack in Guerrero's absence. But you have to say he did the job. And after scoring that opening goal against New Zealand, the one that kind of released the pressure valve, if you like, because at that stage of course, you know, before he scored, the tie was still goalless and the Peruvian fans were still on edge. Look, I think he's probably earned himself a whole lot of new fans by scoring that goal that gave them the 1-0 lead and eventually led them winning that game 2-0. Is he the Timmy Cahill? He might be a little bit like that. I'm not sure how many game selections he'll get if Guerrero is available and fit. But yeah, he will certainly be in that Peruvian squad and is a guy who certainly knows his way around an international football field.
They wouldn't look at playing both Jefferson and Paulo Guerrero up front. There's no guarantee, by the way. I think he's still finding that drug ban, Guerrero. So, if he ends up being put out, sometimes it's, a 1 or 2 year ban for these sort of things. So do we know that Guerrero's actually clear?
We don't actually. No, you're right. Let's assume that he is. And to address that question about the two of them playing up front together, they seem to, on attack, play very much with one man up top, a centre forward at the point of the arrow who plays very high, receives, and as soon as that man receives, whether it be Guerrero or Farfan, then the wingers and the midfield players just come rushing up to get that ball off that man. So it's very much a ball into the centre forward and then a touch off to the likes of Cueva or Carrillo or Edison Flores, one of those players looking to receive from the front man, who often gets the ball with his back to goal. I don't know whether Ricardo Gareca, the coach of Peru, would look at playing two front men, certainly not two front men who are as similar as Farfan and Guerrero are. I think it'll be one or the other. And yeah, as you say, if that drugs ban for Guerrero is not overturned and he in fact can't go to Russia, then Farfan, I guess, becomes more and more important for the team and maybe the man they use. But if they're both available, I wouldn't suspect that both would play.
Geez, the Peruvians will have to start loving Jefferson if they're not loving him now in the World Cup. They've got to rely on him like that. You mentioned Ricardo Gareca, the coach of Peru. He's Argentinian, and in a strange twist of football, he actually knocked out Peru in 1985 with a late goal for Argentina in the World Cup qualifiers at that stage. So obviously he wasn't maybe everyone's first choice when he came in back in 2015. But geez, he's reshaped this team completely to a team that's actually relatively young and inexperienced, but they certainly play for each other, don't they?
Oh, without question. And you can see how much they enjoy playing for Gareca as well. I mean, it's you talk about the absence from the World Cup since 1982, and it seems an awfully long time, doesn't it, for you to be in the international wilderness. But getting out of that South American group isn't the easiest thing in the world. You look at the teams who aren't going to Russia, and you look at a team like Chile and Paraguay and teams like that who haven't made it. And it's really no disgrace to finish outside the top five in South America. And the fact that Peru have finished in the top five and got past New Zealand to get there is something that their fans have long waited for. Gareca's a really interesting guy. He's a professor. They call him the professor. when we were at the media conferences and they were being translated for us, the translator always prefaced the comments with saying, the professor says this or the professor says that. So, you know, he's very highly regarded. He's quite a laid-back character from what I could see in press conferences and also on the sideline as well, but obviously highly respected. And now he gained Peruvian citizenship for life now, having climbed into the World Cup. But now that they're there, I think they would now, you know, obviously love to make progress deep into this tournament. And they found themselves, in Australia's group. It's a really interesting group. And, the Peru-Australia game is just one of a number of fascinating matchups in that group alone.
Now, you talked about, the fact that Ricardo Gareca has done such a great job for the Peruvians, but isn't there this sort of this... I don't know, it's one of those almost a resentment of coaches who don't really hail from the country that they're coaching, and sometimes what actually happens there is that people don't really accept that coach. And given he's Argentinian, they're rivals. I mean, it's, you know what South America's like; they all love their football and stuff, but pretty much the rivalry between countries is huge, especially in that South American qualifying group. Do you think he's fully accepted himself? You talked about Jefferson Farfán. And he's an actual Peruvian, and they find it hard to love him. But do you reckon Ricardo's accepted?
I think he is now. Yeah. He is now that he's got them there. I think that's the biggest factor, that he's actually got them to the World Cup. So now I think he's fully accepted. In the lead-up, it's a big point because, history would show that World Cups are won by teams that are coached by coaches from that country. I think statistically, they've all been won by coaches who are actually from the country that wins the World Cup. Having said that, though, there is precedent around, and we only have to look at Australia in 2006, don't we, with Gus Hiddink taking the team to Germany and doing so well there. I guess you'd say that Pim Verbeek didn't have quite the same influence in 2010, and then Ange had them, of course, in 2014. But yeah, going back to Gareca, look, I think in situations in World Cup situations in international football, I think boards look at the best possible candidate for the job, and if that candidate happens to be a countryman of the players, then even better. But if there there is a better candidate, and the Peruvian board who appointed Gareca obviously thought that he was the best candidate for the job, better than any Peruvian alternative might have been, then they'll appoint that guy. And they've obviously, you know, their decision has been vindicated. He's got them there, and I think now he's accepted, well accepted as a Peruvian, even though he hails from Argentina, and as you say, had a hand in preventing them from reaching previous World Cups.
You had the privilege of calling that second leg in Peru in that World Cup qualifying playoff between New Zealand and also Peru. Tell us what the environment was like and the atmosphere, and after the game, what the celebrations were like. Apparently, the Bob Hawke I think the Prime Minister of Peru suggested they have a day off in celebration. Do you think that they would have done that?
Well, I can tell you that they did. A lot of people had the day off the next day. I spent the following day in Lima, and looking around, Carlos, I wouldn't assess that there were too many people doing too much work that day. The only ones really working were those in hospitality, I think, just trying to serve up food and drink for people. But I have to say that the atmosphere at the ground was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. I hadn't had the privilege of going to South America for a football game before, and to be there at Estadio Nacional in Lima for that game was something I will never forget. The game kicked off at 9:15 in the evening local time. They opened the gates at 5, so over 4 hours before kickoff, and at that time they started to stream in their thousands into that ground. It was full over an hour. In fact, probably 90 minutes before kickoff, that ground was absolutely packed to capacity. And from the first whistle to the last, and the euphoria that erupted afterwards, it was just magnificent, you know. And I know it might have been different had New Zealand somehow managed to get the result and to deny Peru a place at the World Cup. But I have to say that the Peruvian people, the way they treated us over there, there wasn't a huge contingent of New Zealand media or fans, but we were treated, just impeccably. We were welcomed. We were looked after. I didn't feel in fear of my safety at any time during my stay there. And I felt afterwards, look, if it wasn't going to be New Zealand going to the World Cup, then I'm pleased that the Peruvian people get the chance to experience it, because it obviously means so much to them. And you could see that from being over there, just how much it meant to that nation who had been denied World Cup football for so long. So, yeah, amazing atmosphere. And hopefully they'll bring a huge legion of fans to Russia next year, because I think they will really contribute to the flavour of the tournament.
Now, the Australian think tank will now that they know who they're playing, will be sitting down and also, you know, scrutinising every team. And, of course, we've got Denmark and France. But Peru's going to be an interesting one. They'll probably look at some of the play or all the games that they played against New Zealand in the home and away leg. Where did New Zealand, you feel, got most joy when playing against Peru? Obviously, they lost over the two legs, but at the same time, you know, it was pretty tight encounters both home and away.
Yeah, look, I think the home league in particular, I think New Zealand played really well, and they set out their stall to make themselves difficult to break down. Really, I think what they wanted to do was to go to Lima with the tie alive. You know, there's no point heading over to a South American country 3 or 4 nil down, because you're simply not going to pull that back. And when it was nil all at full-time in Wellington, I think that was achieved, that the tie was alive. I think New Zealand's best chances across the two legs came courtesy of Chris Wood. And we know that he was severely hampered from participating in both games because of a hamstring injury he brought into camp with him. He only played 20 minutes in Wellington and then came on at half-time in Lima. But he was the man who caused the most problems for the Peruvian defence, simply because he was something different. He was a big guy. He put himself about. He's got Premier League pedigree, of course. So a guy like that, I guess in many ways a little bit similar to Tommy Juric, I guess you might say, that kind of player, a big robust kind of number nine. That was the kind of player who caused the most problems for Peru. When New Zealand tried to play a bit of tiki-taka through the middle of the park, or tried to get the ball wide and into the box, you know, they were often stymied in their attempts to do that. But longer balls, a bit more of a direct approach, with Wood using his arms and his elbows and his legs and his bulk to try and cause problems in the opposing penalty area. That seemed to be where New Zealand had their best opportunity, looking at looking to feed off those knockdowns, or Wood himself looking to get on the end of things. So I guess that might be something that the Australian coaching staff look at.
And the defence, I mean, people talk about South American teams, being very good in possession and going forward and cutting up teams. But, the really good Argentinian teams of the past, or good Brazilian teams, always had a terrific defence. How does their defence generally stack up?
Yeah, very good. Very good. In fact, they were relatively untroubled in the large parts of both legs, to be honest with you, Carlos. They're marshalled well at the back by a couple of pretty strong centre backs, and Alberto Rodriguez in particular, just an exceptional centre back, a guy who looks very, very solid at the back. The full backs, as I say, get up and down quite a bit, but they do their defensive work as well. And they also have good defensive midfielders, Yotun, who didn't actually play in the second league. He came off the bench, but he's a guy who sits in front of the back four and shields them from on-rushing attacks, but also likes to drop deep in between the centre-back and the full-back, pick up the ball and bang those long balls forward that I talked about before to the likes of Farfan or Guerrero. That seems to be the plan A for Peru. So, yeah, defensively, they are solid. They didn't concede a lot of goals in qualifying, and they were also very, very solid against, admittedly, a lower-ranked team in New Zealand in those two legs. But, yeah, hard to break down. The one thing I would say, though, is that they do open themselves up to a possibility of a counter-attack, because, as I said before, often when the ball goes into the centre-forward, those midfielders and the wingers, make haste to get forward and support of that centre-forward. And if the touch from Guerrero or Farfan or whoever it might be isn't great and that attack breaks down, then there is the opportunity for a counter-attack. And with players out of position and the defenders back-pedalling, that might also be a place where Australia might be able to hurt Peru. New Zealand didn't get the opportunity to do it, but with Australia's players they have at their disposal, then maybe the counter-attack is also something they could look at to profit from.
Now, Jason, we're looking for a coach at the moment, as you know, and your analysis this morning, you might even get the job with the way you're going with your analysis here, mate. Timmy Cahill. Would you take Timmy Cahill, given that you said Chris Wood offered the Kiwis something different, and we know how well he's going at the moment with Burnley in England. He's a top, top player, and Timmy's still probably regarded as one of the best aerialists in the world, even at the age of 37. What are your thoughts? Should Tim Cahill be an option for us, whether it's off the bench or even starting against a team like Peru?
I would take Timmy Cahill to Russia every day of the week. He has to be in the 23 for me, from my observation point over the side of the Tasman. And once again, I'm not 100% up with the nuances of the way Australia played the game. But from what I've seen, Tim Cahill has to be part of it. The number of times that he had an influence on games in that qualifying run that Australia had, and when they went deep into those playoff games where cool heads were crucial and goals were needed and a steadying hand was required on the wheel. And I think more often than not, Tim Cahill provided that. Look, I think whoever coaches the Australian team simply has to put him amongst their 23. In fact, I actually can't believe there's any argument to the contrary. I think he simply has to be on the plane to Russia. I'd have him as important as guys like Trent Sainsbury, Matt Ryan, Aaron Moy, guys like that, who are obviously locked in, rusted on members of the starting 11. I'd have Timmy Cahill right up there as much for his influence off the field as on. He's obviously a total professional. He does everything he needs to keep himself match fit. And even though he's not getting a lot of minutes for Melbourne City at the moment, and that's a different story altogether, for me, he simply has to be part of Australia's World Cup campaign.
Well, Jason, thanks for your chat today. I think the insight you've given us makes us feel a little bit better about having to play the unknown that is Peru. It's been handy that they've played the Kiwis in those playoffs. A very good Kiwis team, by the way, too, that would hold their own in a World Cup. So I think it gives us a better understanding of what we're going to be up against. If you were now, of course, you can remove yourself from all the emotion of this now. If you were to remove yourself and actually have a tip between, who's going to be winning between Peru and Australia in that World Cup in Russia, 6 months out, what do you think?
Oh, well, I mean, given that I'm talking to an Australian audience here, I have to say that certainly the Socceroos are a chance. And look, if I remain impartial and I hover above it, having seen Australia play a little bit in qualifying and watching a lot of their games with interest, And as you say, having watched Peru play across 180 minutes against New Zealand, I think Australia are definitely a chance. Absolutely, they're a chance. And the game against Peru is likely to be pretty key to their chances of getting out of that group. France is going to be difficult. Denmark are a very good side, who I think Australia also would back themselves, though, to get a result against. So the Peru game could be pivotal. It could be a really, really important game to Australia's chances of getting out of the group. I think the neutral would probably say that a draw would be a likely result. But I would, I'd back Australia. I'd back Australia to do enough against a Peruvian side that's going to be under pressure to perform at their first World Cup for nearly four decades. So, look, I'll say a late Timmy Cahill winner for a 2-1 victory. How's that?
I'll take that one any day, mate. And by the way, you've got the Socceroo job. You've done so well this morning. Thanks, thanks very much, Jason, for joining us.
Yeah, pleasure to chat, Carlos, anytime.
That's Jason Pine, Sky Sports commentator. Of course, the commentator that called the games, playoff games for New Zealand versus Peru, and knows the Peruvians intimately. And that's why we got him on to talk about that. Of course, Denmark is the other team that we've got to be playing against. And who better than a legendary Danish goalkeeper who played over 100 times for Denmark between 1999 and also 2012? Thomas Sorensen joins us this morning to talk about Denmark. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us this morning. I guess you've got an interest in the World Cup draw on two fronts. Your home country, Denmark, and your adopted country, Australia, have been drawn to play each other in Russia 2018. How do you feel about that?
No, I think it's pretty exciting. There was a bit of a cheer in the household when the draw was made. And yeah, no, it's a mouth-watering group, I think, overall. I think both teams... we'll be pretty happy. I think you avoided like the likes of Brazil and Germany. And yeah, France is a good team, a lot of good individual young players, but probably not ranked up among the like the top teams. And yeah, no, I think Peru, you've just spoken about them. You know, they're a little bit unknown to us, but a strong team. So, it's both teams will have a chance to progress and potentially move on to the next stage.
Denmark's a really interesting kettle of fish there, Thomas, in that they had to qualify through playoffs, but they beat the team that went directly through, Poland, 4-0 at home. It was quite a comprehensive win. And, of course, we know that they also demolished the Republic of Ireland in the second leg of the playoffs, 5-1 away from home. So they can score a lot of goals. What are the pundits saying about this Denmark team in Denmark itself?
You know, they obviously changed manager for this qualifying round, and I think they had a pretty slow start. Took a bit of time to gel. He changed a few things around. So they lost in Poland and lost a couple of other one more game as well. So they were a little bit behind, but really finished strong. And as you say, they beat Poland quite convincingly at home late in the qualifiers, and yeah, demolished Ireland. So I think it's a team, on the ascent. I think the likes of Eriksen is coming to his own. He's a dominant player for Denmark, and you have Kasper Schmeichel in goal, who's very very solid. Simon Kjær, who plays for Seville in Spain, so they got a good sort of center of the team, a good spine all the way up. And you know if we can get Bentner back to his best, he's sort of coming along in again after a few bad years. And so I think Denmark is a team that if everyone is fit and everyone playing well, I think they should have a good chance of a good World Cup.
I'm a firm believer. I mean, we talk about the Dutch influence in Australian football and stuff, but you look at the Scandinavian nations, the way they go about playing their football, the collective, no real superstars. I mean, Christian Eriksen is, of course, one that even Barcelona, there's talk about him maybe going to Barcelona in the next 12 months, but there's no huge superstars, but just terrific professionals who are really good in good leagues around the world. And when they get the collective right and they're happy as a team, they're really hard to beat. I believe that's almost a style of football that Australia is most suited to play.
Yeah, I think the two teams or the two countries as such are very alike, because it's not a superpower within soccer, but so you live off that collectiveness and togetherness in the group, and You know that's the strength of your side, and I think both Australia and Denmark, are very much alike, and I think it'd be a pretty good game. I think they're playing the second game, which is pretty crucial one. Really, no matter how your first game has gone, you really need points in that second one to set yourself up. So yeah, it'll be a hopefully an open, entertaining game. I'll be rooting for Denmark, but I'm sure it'll be a tight one.
Now, Thomas, of course, having played 101 times for Denmark and being just a legend for that national team, obviously you've taken intimate interest in the team through the World Cup qualifying process. How does a team, and I know you're not going to divulge, people in Denmark aren't hearing us right now, mate, so you can tell us what you really think, but how does a team like Australia defeat a team like Denmark? If you were coaching Australia going into that game, how would you approach it?
No, but I think, again, the key players, Eriksen, you have to shut him down. If you give him too much space, then, he's got the quality to find the passes and, he can shoot from long range. So I think, defensively, you need to be set up. But I think Australia is suited for that. I think they're pretty strong in that department. And I think Denmark can, potentially be hit on set plays. I don't think they're incredibly strong. I think Australia is potentially, fairly strong in that department with obviously Aaron Moore's delivery and a lot of the big strong players that they have. So I think that those are the areas where, shut down Eriksen and then, you can hit Denmark on set players. I think they've looked sort of a little bit vulnerable at times.
Now, of course, the big talk about Timmy Cahill hopefully going to his fourth World Cup, but there's no certainty. Obviously, he's a bit worried. He needs game time, and the new manager might come in and might say, listen, we're not going to take you, Timmy, because you're a little bit over the hill and not getting game time. If you were the coach of Australia, would you feel that Tim Cahill was essential to take to this World Cup?
No, yeah, I think the quality that he offers on the pitch, and again the leadership off the pitch is vital. I don't think you can't overlook that. He can be a match winner. No matter if he plays 90 minutes or if he comes on late in the game, he has an incredible timing in the box, and I think he showed it against Syria where he scored and won the game for Australia. So I think, if I was the manager, no matter how many minutes, obviously he needs to be fit, but, he's a guy that I would certainly take and find a role. If that is a starting role, time will tell. But again, I don't think Australia have an array of strikers that is good enough to keep him out of the team. I think he offers too much to not get on that plane.
And of course, you played in two World Cups, Thomas, in 2002 and 2010 for Denmark. When you're 6 months out, obviously your focus is on that World Cup. If you're a professional, you're worried about your club football also. But what makes a difference between having a good or bad World Cup in the lead-up? What do you need to do to get right to make sure you're in a good frame of mind, good physical shape to be right for that World Cup in 6 months' time?
Yeah, obviously it has to be it's a big target for the season. But what lies between now and then is really, really important that you go about your everyday football life as you should, because otherwise you won't get there. But also make sure that as the season comes to an end that you potentially get a little bit of a break, refreshing. Because it is a really, really long year when you play for more or less 12 months in a row, and you have obviously the huge pressure of the World Cup, and at the end of it, it can be quite tiring. So you need to make sure you keep your mind fresh and your body ticking over, but also letting yourself have a few breaks whenever you can. To stay fresh all the way through. It is a huge demand going away for 6 weeks, in a foreign country, mentally and physically, with the extra games that you play. So I think that'll be vital for the players from now, still that time.
Now, Thomas, you've grown, you've attracted a lot of respect from people in this country since you've come here and also played for Melbourne City. But I'm going to put you on the spot now. Australia versus Denmark, the second game of the group. What's your tip for that that result?
Well, let's hope that you know, Australia have beaten France and we've beaten Peru, so we'll take a draw in that one. You know, again, like I said before, I think it'd be really tight. You know, I think potentially Denmark have more game winners, but there's also ways that Australia can hurt Denmark. So you know, I think a draw is highly likely. But again, if there's a winner, I must be honest and say I've got my fingers crossed for Denmark.
Unless the new coach, Thomas, recruits you as an assistant coach for the Socceroos setup, would you take that job? Would you ever take that job?
Yeah, you never know. You never know. But yeah, for sure, I'm a professional, so then I'll be going all in to win for sure. And you know, your passport has to. Stay in the dressing room until after the game, if that was to happen.
Good on you, Thomas. Well, thanks for joining us today. It's a big, big 6 months to go. I know you're excited about Denmark and excited about Australia. We're excited about Australia itself, but it's been great speaking to you, and we hope to speak to you again down the track.
Pleasure.
Good on you, mate. That's Thomas Sørensen, legendary Danish goalkeeper, played over 100 times for Denmark between 1999 and 2012. What a fantastic ambassador for the game he has been, and even in Australia with Melbourne City, he's been fantastic. Of course, that brings Football Extra to an end today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a great day in football.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.